it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon producing the show. He is back in the studio. We are on location today, a couple days in a row. Going to be fun as we get set for the big game on Sunday afternoon between the Chiefs and Eagles. Today we find ourselves at Rally House up at Berry Woods Crossing, excited to be here till 2 o'clock this afternoon, the perfect spot to get geared up for the game on Sunday. I was looking, they actually even have a specific shirt just for this Sunday's game.
Which I guess some people like collect in every given year, so they've got one for the opening game every year. I think it'd be really good if you were going to your first game.
Oh, yeah, you got a kid that's going to their first ever Chiefs game, let's say. The shirt has the Chiefs-Eagles cool design on it with the date and everything. So this is this spot. I'm looking at some cornhole sets as well. You're going to set the tailgate on Sunday afternoon. It's going to be warm out there Sunday, but it's going to still be a great tailgating day, especially with that 325 kick. That's a full day of tailgating that you get on
sure
Sunday.
Is.
And they got everything you need for it here at Rally House. Of course, hope you come and see us at the Berry Woods Crossing location. You can also go to rallyhouse.com as well. And today we'll be registering you to win a $250 gift card. That'll get you started with Sevier.
Not bad. Not bad at all. One lucky winner will obviously get that $250. All you have to do is show up and register to win. That's it. That simple. And then you'll have a chance to win that $250 right here at Rally House at Berry Woods Crossing. This is like the theater I take the kids to.
Is this the one right here?
Yeah, this is the closest. This isn't the closest theater to my house.
It's just like the biggest one.
But it's the closest AMC to my house, in which you know I get a couple of free tickets. So, you know, I got to be taking advantage of the
humble brag.
I gotta be taking advantage of the location. I'm just checking my ID now. I used to try to maybe I could skirt the system, but
checking your ID. Oh, to redeem
to make
the
sure
tickets.
It's me. Yeah, yeah. Couldn't just have you log into the old app and go for free, Alex.
Wait, no? So if you went and bought tickets, you can't send me the tickets?
No, I gotta be there.
Oh, okay.
I gotta be there.
Okay,
you know, makes it a little harder, but it is what it is. You know, life is the way that it is. But come see us, obviously, at Rally House today. Looking forward to talking to you guys. The Royals, which we'll get to in just a little bit, obviously won last night and desperately needed to win, especially because the Mariners won again late last night. But the needs to win part becomes an interesting part of the conversation. We saw this headline over on ESPN, and I thought it was a really, really, really good topic. We were both like, yeah, you know what? That's a good question. Which team needs to avoid being 0-2 the most? The Chiefs, the Ravens, or the Lions? Of those teams, who is at the bigger risk of being in real trouble if they actually start the season 0-2? I think there's a lot of people who would answer this nationally. I think there's a lot of people who would answer this question, Chiefs.
For sure.
Knowing that they've got the Ravens, knowing that they've got, I don't know where the Lions are, but that originally looked like a very difficult game. The Jags looked pretty good in their week one matchup, so maybe they're a little tougher in a couple of weeks, too. I could see why people would say the Chiefs. I think it's the Ravens. I do not think the Ravens can just start 0-2 with that roster, considering the fact they choked as a double-digit favorite against Cleveland. That would be bad. That would be a very dark sign for the start of their season.
So the Chiefs, I would say, and we're going to hear from Gronk here in about 30 minutes, his comments about the Chiefs and their mindset and other teams' mindsets. I do think it is absolutely true that if the Chiefs were to lose on Sunday, the national narrative on Monday would be that it's totally over.
It's done.
And heck, I think there'd be some people locally, and I think we would get texts on Monday's show saying it's over. I think so much nuance is required to have that take.
Sure.
Do the Chiefs lose on Sunday because Harrison Butker missed a 58-yard field goal? Is it because Jake Elliott made a 58-yard field goal for the Eagles?
Against a really good Eagles team?
Or is it that the Chiefs scored 10 points and had two turnovers and gave up 20 and lost 21-10? You know what I mean? There's a nuance to it. But I understand the reality of any football team going 0-2 that has Super Bowl aspirations and expectations, I should say, that has been as dominant as the Chiefs have been. I think the Chiefs need it for – look, this, every fan base wants to avoid 0-2. I think this fan base needs it desperately because they're ready to just completely lose it because of what happened last Friday night. And because we frankly have not seen in the Mahomes era ever, Patrick Mahomes start 0-2. We've never seen Mahomes be more than one game under 500. Like, that's all new. Now, to your point about the Ravens, I think for them it's unique because they played a AFC contender in week one, and now they're playing a divisional team in Cleveland. The Chiefs, of course, played a divisional team in the Chargers, technically a road divisional game, and now they're playing an out-of-conference opponent in the Eagles. And so it's big, but it's not going to impact seeding per se. Whereas the Ravens, if they were to drop, and they're like 11.5-point favorites against Cleveland, like, so much different matchup. They have a way easier game to fall back on than the Chiefs do. That's the challenge. The Chiefs are playing an Eagles. The Ravens, lost a tough,
Super Bowl champion,
the Ravens lost a tough game, and they get the Cleveland Browns. You know, the Detroit Lions were the other team you mentioned. They lost against a very good a team that we maybe think can go to the Super Bowl. I certainly do.
Reasonable loss.
And the Packers. And now they get a divisional game, but it's still the Chicago Bears. They're not playing the Minnesota Vikings. They're not playing the Philadelphia Eagles themselves. They're not playing the Commanders.
But their schedule after this one in Game 2, Gold, and this is like part of it. We obviously know that there's a challenge and an opponent part of Kansas City's schedule that's difficult. But these other two teams, what makes them interesting is they're not the only ones. So they do take on Chicago. But let's say you did start 0-2 if you were Detroit, and then you got in the situation. Everybody's like, uh-oh, old Dan Campbell, huh? Maybe no Ben Johnson? Maybe no offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator? Maybe it's not going so smooth. They then face at Baltimore. 2 weeks after that, at Cincinnati, at Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Minnesota, at Washington, at Philly. Are you nuts? If they start 0-2, it could get kind of dark for Detroit. I'm not saying they can't, because they're not likely to go on a streak of wins.
But I don't think the
Chiefs are more likely to go on a streak after starting 0-2 as part of it. I actually might have the Chiefs third in my list.
I don't think the NFC, though, is tough. Like, the middle grouping, okay, so it's, you look at the Eagles, you look at the Packers, let's say, okay, and the division maybe is tough for the Lions, but are the Lions, if they start 0-2, and I don't think they will, are they in danger, though, of not being one of the seven best teams in the NFC? Like, you know what I mean? I don't think so. It depends on what are we talking about? In danger of not making the playoffs? In danger of not winning their division? Those are different conversations. Any team that starts 0-2 is obviously in danger of not winning their division. I mean, that's just just a no-brainer. But is it in danger of, like, thinking that the season could fall apart? I don't know. Look, as far as the Chiefs go, we will give our official predictions on Sunday's game tomorrow, I understand, and the Chiefs are 1.5-point underdogs. Patrick Mahomes has only been a home underdog one other time in his entire career. This will be his 69th game at home, by the way. Nice number. And he has only been a dog once.
Against
Buffalo.
Okay, always Buffalo.
Regular season game. But now I just think nuance is required. How do they look on Sunday? I certainly am not panicking after week one for the Chiefs. I think they need this game, but yes, for them, record-wise, but also I think it's more of the calming of the waters also amongst the fan base and everything. But it really depends on how do they lose or how do they win. You know, just win, sure, but at the same time, just do we see some of the issues corrected? Do we see the defense still running into each other? Obviously, offensively, it cost them an injury, but truly, the defense, why was Ladd McConkey so open? In large part, it's not only were they playing zone and pretty soft, but they had guys running into each other. Trent McDuffie couldn't even get over to match up with McConkey because he ran into, or they ran into him, one of their linebackers. So there's a lot of miscommunication that happened in week one. Does that get cleared up? That should help their play as well.
The one thing I would make in an argument for the other two teams and why I would have the Chiefs last, and I'm interested. I find it interesting that your answer was Kansas City in the sense that where they are is, of the three teams, there's only one still that if they started 0-2, I would say this could lead to a bad missed playoff season.
I'm talking about the fan base. I'm talking about the I'm not talking
no, I
about
get
like
– I get it.
I'm talking about for the – what. We need to win.
The mindset going into
which,
it. Detroit will have two divisional losses?
Which will be more of – I'm saying going 0-2, what will be more of a freakout nationally? Obviously, locally, it would be in Kansas City. But if the Lions go 0-2 nationally, like, they'll talk about it, but it won't be the end of the world. If the Ravens go 0-2, they'll probably get a lot of noise about them. If the Chiefs go 0-2 nationally, they're going to – I mean, every single national show is going to act like it is all over. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be ridiculous if they go 0-2. That's what I mean by – as far as the Chiefs, I'm just clear on it. Once again, it depends how do they look. I don't think this football team starting 0-2 is unable to recover. No, that's crazy. And you were getting ready to say it because of their track record as well. But I need to also see some improvement. They can't go 0-2 and lose by 12 at home, okay, and have defense with no pressure again. Then I will be concerned at that point.
Yeah, get lit up by the Eagles offense would certainly be concerning. I don't disagree that the national narrative will always be stronger on the Chiefs because of how good they are, you know, just generally speaking, how good they are, which makes a massive difference in there. I'm just like, from an actual team perspective, the other ones would be in way more trouble. Ravens would have lost to the Bills, a game that they absolutely had in hand. And then you would add a divisional loss to the worst divisional team. So, like, those teams, like, the losses are worse. The Chiefs might lose to two playoff teams in the first 2 weeks if we're talking about them going 0-2. The defending Super Bowl champions and a team that won 11 games last year. So it's not like these are losses you're like, oh, no, now it probably means those close wins are going to be a lot harder to come by and you're going to have to improve dramatically. But I also know for the Chiefs is they're without their number one weapon.
They are.
Hell, they're without their number two weapon for now.
Yeah, the Lions are so fully healthy. The Lions.
Yeah, they got everybody.
The Ravens, to my knowledge, the Ravens are fully healthy. Maybe I'm missing some injury, but Kyle Hamilton's out there. Zay Flowers out there. Mark Andrews is out there. Derrick Henry, Lamar, like, they're out there. The Lions were unimpressive, but I also think, and we'll find out more about the Packers tonight, but some of the Lions not looking great, I think the Packers deserve an immense amount of credit for that. I know Nate Taylor said he's really worried about the Lions just from what he saw. He didn't like it, and they have a new OC, so everybody is wondering, hey, is this just not going to be the same offense? They did lose their center. I mean, they lost some pieces as well. But I get what you're saying. I think from a true standings perspective, yes, Baltimore would have two AFC losses. The Chiefs would still only have one in that scenario. The Lions would have two divisional losses. So it's much more problematic in that regard. I just, you know, there's two different ways to look at it, obviously. I just mean from a fan perspective and the narrative, you know, people will go way freak out mode more on the Chiefs going 0-2 nationally than any of the other two teams going 0-2. That's all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. Because everybody's waiting for the shoe to drop. Everybody's waiting for them to show, you know, like, but they've shown humanity before. You know, like, they've looked human in some previous seasons. Last year they went 15-2, but it didn't look like some dominant team running through everybody at 15-2. They've had 11-5 seasons, right? They've had some ones where they showed some cracks. Yeah. They always do bounce back into it. This would be the biggest crack, admittedly. Of the entire time the Chiefs have existed, this might be, or under Patrick Mahomes, this would probably be the lowest point of confidence fans would have probably ever.
Well, it'd be the first time
first
in
time
the Mahomes
era. .500, yeah. Pretty much first time 0-2, two games that matter. You know, like, all of those things would make a pretty big difference.
913-586-7965, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line up and running. I already see a lot of texts coming in. You guys can always interact with us. A few people on the text line, Cody, saying, hey, somebody would be 2-0, though, in the AFC West. That is true. The Raiders and Chargers do play each other Monday night, so there will be
fair.
At least teams that are 2-0, if we're being honest. The Broncos this week have a game in which I still think opponent-wise for them, it's not the toughest out there as well. So I think the Broncos could easily be 2-0 before this week is over. If you're looking at the Monday night game, I believe the Chargers are, 3.5-point favorites. Now, the Broncos are going to the Colts. It depends how real did you think that was from the Colts, or were the Dolphins just that bad? It's a tougher matchup for the Broncos than they had last week against Tennessee, but the Broncos are slight favorites in that game. So you probably have the Broncos or a Chargers team that's starting 2-0. But my thing on that is, especially if the Chiefs win, you have two games still against the Broncos. You have two games still against the Raiders.
Yeah.
You still have another one at home against the Chargers. Like, acting like the division, that they couldn't make up the ground in the division, to me would be pretty crazy, even if they were to drop this game.
That inevitable question would still be, what is the final record of the team we think is winning the division? And I don't think it's 12 or 13 wins. I think it's 11 wins if it's not the Chiefs, right? I think it's probably that same, maybe 12. And if you tell me you start 0-2, you're like, can they still win 12 games out of 17? Yeah. Yeah, they can still win.
But they've got to show some sign of improvement on Sunday. I get what you're saying offensively, that they're down their two big weapons. I get it's more about the defense for me. I've said it all week. Like,
That's why this one would be so huge. Just being 1-1 and stabilized.
For sure. It would calm everybody down. It would calm everything. The team could take a little bit of a deep breath as well. But I think it's more about the defense showing something than it is even the offense. Like, the offense, I think, is going to be a tough watch and a frustrating one for weeks and weeks, guys. I just think that's how it's going to play out. We saw a lot last year. They still could score, but it's not going to be as pleasing to the eyes as we all wanted it to be. Defense is where they're going to have to join the party a little bit more. And I know you're saying, well, they've been carrying this team for 2 years. I know, but they've got to come up to the pack a little bit more than what we saw
against
the Chargers.
Going into this season, I was the opposite of the stance that you were saying now, in the sense that I was like, hey, it's time for the offense to carry the torch for a little bit, let the defense off the hook for a bit, and let's lead by scoring. But now, unfortunately, I'm not sure they have that luxury. Because before, I thought that they had you know, at least Xavier Worthy and then eventually Rashee Rice as a part of the offense. And now, Gold, they're down to neither of those guys. And Hollywood Brown is their number one wide receiver. So the defense doesn't have to be the Super Bowl caliber defense I'm used to seeing at the end of the season. But they got to be a lot scrappier than they were in that first game. Better in the red zone than they were in that first game. And you can't give up third and 14s, third and 10s. It's the third and long stuff that kills me maybe more than any of it.
Well,
fine, you give up second and three for a first down, I come to expect it. Third and 14, third and 10, no, those have got to be stops. You pay Chris Jones and George Karloftis a lot of money for those not to be stops.
And those two players in particular, yes, but in general, any of these key pillars of the organization, those are the guys that can't be making the mistakes when clearly you're trying to bring along some younger players, when you're trying to get Jaden Hicks to come along and it's going to look like it's going to be a little bit more of a work in progress than any of us thought it was going to be for him. But you have to – Chris Jones can't make the mistake. He owned it again. We've said it multiple times this week, but that mistake just can't happen from a veteran, from an all-pro, a future Hall of Famer on a third and 14. That's why Drew Tranquil got after him in the moment as well. The hope is that Steve Spagnuolo, and there is a track record here, now not usually one week to the next that quickly, but 2 years ago, his defense got off to a slow start, and as they got to week eight, week nine, it got much, much better. Are we going to see a big leap after a Friday night game to a Sunday afternoon game? It's going to have to be somewhat better. Otherwise, we're going to be sitting here on Monday talking about, once again, this defense really struggling to shut down a team that of course, has some pretty good playmakers on the outside in A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. And A.J. Brown only had one catch against the Cowboys. Something tells me that will not be the case this go-around as the Chiefs take on the Eagles. Thinking of wide receivers, coming up at 11 o'clock, former Chiefs wide receiver Danan Hughes is going to join us. He's part of the Chiefs radio network. We'll get his perspective on now a wide receiver room down Worthy and Rice. And then at 11:30, thinking of defense, excited to have the former Chiefs safety Super Bowl champion Tyrann Mathieu call into the show. He will be back in Kansas City this week and banging the drum on Sunday at Arrowhead to get the crowd fired up. I want to get his perspective on this defense. He's been with Spags, obviously. He knows what kind of adjustments happened. What did he see from the safeties? He was part of the YouTube pregame show last week as well. So I think we'll also ask him, hey, does he have any snaps left in him? He retired, but, like, you know, he's got that football itch.
Yeah.
I saw that on Twitter. A lot of people are like, hey, is he banging the drum or is he also coming in for a tryout? No, his rights are still owned by the Saints, but he did retire.
Yeah, he did. He's done. Now, he might say that once the season – I assumed if he had the itch – he retired in training camp.
Yeah.
It's not like he wasn't actively playing football. I'm sure that was at least part of it to go in there, and we're outside of that window, so we'll see. We're looking at the – we are live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook. I'm interacting in the chats like I typically do over there.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you can text us at 913-586-7965. Drew has told us he cannot locate the 3D figurines of us.
What, so he steal them?
That he typically puts up – potentially. On the video stream.
Oh, my
stream.
Goodness. Are people stealing the figurines now?
Of us? And by the way, they know we use those for this. I swear to you, I will check cameras if they're actually missing. Now, my assumption is that they're just placed in an area that Drew did not find, and we will see.
It's certainly not in a place that I
put
them.
Currently, Drew said, hey, guys, I found something to put on the camera for now. I had not seen what that thing was. It is a lamp. That's it, Drew? Lamp and some cleaning spray?
Yeah, it's a lamp.
You couldn't put up like a jersey or like a stuffed animal or something?
Well,
we got all kinds of stuff in the office.
I had to get back in here. So
lamp?
Yeah.
So if you'd like to see that lamp, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch,
it potentially
and Facebook.
Could change during the break, but yeah.
It's a pretty traditional style lamp, I'd say. Don't love the shade. You know? Of all lamp choices, this is the one that's been living in the studio for the better part of 3 months, and I'm still not totally sure why. It's just in there.
Now we got a mystery about these figurines. That's why. Where did these figurines go? Who may have misplaced them? Who may have intentionally hidden from us?
Are you sure you just didn't see them?
I'll be honest. Typically, what I do is the box that I put them on, I slide over to the side, off to the side, all the way behind the tarp. I put the box of the figurines on top of that box, and it's there, and it always has been there. I don't put it back in our office. I just leave it right there, and it has not been touched to this point in all the remotes that you guys have done this year. It's still been in the same spot, but it was not there today.
In the commercial break, we'll have you check again, I guess. It's not
I
in its normal spot. Doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, I'll check
now
one
instead,
more time.
Everybody's just getting people standing in the back of the window, in the back of the screen. So there's still something to watch, and at the very least, it's another way to consume, listen to, and enjoy the show. We'll make sure that we interact with you over there in case you don't and are not near a radio. The Royals last night, I'll say, they had. I mean, if they were getting ready to be five games back, dude, it would have been done. And I already know, I said, Vern's like, hey, you've heard it in this long. if they're still the hottest team, and maybe tomorrow starts the they're the hottest team in baseball part of it.
Okay.
Vinny came through. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying they needed it to stay alive to not be dead. But what Vern said yesterday is still something I do agree with. Their ability to win in spite of the issues that they have had injury-wise this year. Gold, it has been, you said to Vern, it's the antithesis of the level of health they had last year. They were one of the healthiest teams in all of baseball last year, and as a result of that, were a playoff team. They have been one of the most, if not the most, injured rotations in baseball. They're still pitching well. They've had to overcome the league's worst offense for a huge chunk of the season, and at least they're still in it. I feel better about 2026 than I was expecting at the end of the season, considering the fact that they are not currently in a playoff spot.
So you had a win yesterday. And just to even give yourself a remote chance at having the Mariners series still mattering, I mean, they're behind the Guardians, they're behind the Rangers, they're behind the Mariners, and we know they have three against the Mariners next week. You have to be within three going into the series, in my opinion, to have any shot. So they still have ground to make up this week. I understand what Vern's saying, which is like, why call it dead right the second? There's 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is in the season. I understand that, but you're now positioned almost where even if you sweep the Mariners, still not good enough. And that's a problem. that's a massive problem.
Unless you make a round this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for me to believe it will happen, but they would have to. They need to win like six in a row, Cody. They need to get on like a six-game winning streak, and part of those six needs to be sweeping the Mariners. And so, yes, if they do that, then next Friday could be a lot of fun. But that is a tall ask, and frankly, they have not shown their ability to do that. Now, I agree with your statement about where they're at as an organization, considering everything. I'll remind people, as we all know, the expectation was to win the division and to be a playoff team. That obviously
division got out the window.
That obviously is not going to happen. The playoff team, we'll see. It's a very slim chance of that happening. I agree with you that with all the injuries that they had, it is the fact that we're even still talking about them having a shot, albeit a remote one, to get in, is a testament to multiple players that have stepped up and some, I think, very prudent moves that they made.
Yeah, some good trades
in the middle of the season. As far as 2026 goes. Yeah, there's the rotation should give you plenty of promise. Guys next year that have solidified themselves in the rotation, Noah Cameron, Cole Reagans.
Even just the additional depth of arms of Berger and Kulik.
They put themselves in a spot where they have an ability to go and make a trade or two to boost the outfield. Now, I think they are well aware that the outfield was their biggest problem this year other than the injury bug hitting them. But, you know, there's also still that sentiment like just because we are applauding the fact that they overcame injuries and, you know, I think JJ even said to us a couple days ago or 2 days ago, you know, if you would have told them all the injuries, they would have thought they were like bearing down a 100 loss season or something. So while they get credit for that, I hope that doesn't convince anybody within the organization that like, oh, we'll see if everybody just comes back healthy next year. We were able to get to, you know, 83 wins this year and we had all the injuries. Wow, that means we actually got a pretty good club here. We don't need to do like, I hope they don't think
they don't need to
make some more. And you're like, oh, of course not. I'm just saying the outfield free agent market is not great. The only way the outfield gets better in the offseason is trading away a few in-house pitching options. You can pick who they are. I think Chris Bubich is almost impossible to trade now because he's coming off of an injury. Okay, then you start looking at control and age. Okay, Seth Lugo's not getting traded. You just gave him an extension. Cole Reagans, good luck getting anything of value for him in the offseason given the injury that he had. Michael Wacha is older. Not going to get enough for him to get the outfielder that you really want to change the game for you. So really, pitching-wise, you're down to being willing to trade a Noah Cameron, being willing to
Blake Mitchell.
Trade, obviously, a prospect in Blake Mitchell. You're going to have to make a move like that. So their position, well, you know, pitching-wise heading into next year, that's the best thing heading into 26 for me is it gives them some options. But I just hope that they don't look at this and say, well, with all the injuries, the fact that we won this many games still is really impressive and think that that doesn't mean that there weren't still major problems even without the injuries to this team.
So much of the offense right now does feel like it's going to end up relying on the fact that Carter Jensen and Jack Caglione will have good sophomore years. Because right now, five parts of the lineup, I would argue, are already locked up. Mikel Garcia, Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino, Bobby Wood Jr., and Jonathan India are all a part of the everyday lineup for the Royals next year. No real question about it. I wouldn't be surprised to find out if I added Kyle Isbell to that list that he would also be a guy that I would just kind of anticipate based on the way he's done it, that he would be one of the guys in there too. So we're really down to just the three remaining spots, one of which I know will be Jack Caglione's, and they're going to just bank on Jack Caglione be better. For me, it is just about the thing that we just talked about. The one, like, just singular, you know, outfielder to improve the offense and include the depth in it, right? So get a guy in left field who can hit. Not, and this is not, like, not Lofton or Grichik, like an actual everyday big league player. And I know that, like, some of the other deals that were on the table, Profar and Santander, didn't work. But, like, come on. Somebody like that is what the Royals need.
All right, coming up next, Rob Gronkowski was on with Kay Adams, had some strong comments about this year's Chiefs team. Does he have a point? And what would that mood be like if, in fact, things don't end up well this week?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Weekend. Don't forget, when we talk college football here on the show, coverage on 96.5 The Fan brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanners are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your college team. Catch every play and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanners locations. Bud Light and Tanners, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. I know tomorrow we'll talk a little more college football. Drew's excited for the college football slate. Clearly, the South Florida Miami game has his attention. He told us that
on the CW network.
First day we let Drew do a college football segment. He started bringing USF on the network like right after One Tree Hill airs. Drew,
hey, it's the team. Hey, they might be the team to watch this weekend. Actually, believe it or not, they're becoming a fan favorite.
It is a top 25 matchup.
Miami's looked so good too.
Yes,
it definitely is. And of course, you can get geared up for all the colleges here in the area. Whether we're talking KU, K-State, Mizzou, you name it, they got it all here at Rally House. And of course, for the Chiefs game on Sunday, as we are broadcasting live at the Barry Woods Crossing location up here in KC North. If you haven't visited your local Rally House in the KC area, what are you waiting for? Largest selection of that Chiefs team gear. You will find the fans' playground, basically, to gear up for the season. This place is massive. This is one of the bigger Rally House locations as well. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. But they're always bringing in new styles, latest styles, restocking the most popular gear for you as we get set for this weekend. And of course, if you come by, you can register to win a $250 gift card to Rally House.
I'll get you a lot. They still have that Wizards jacket I kind of like.
Those are nice. Those are really nice. The
that,
retro,
like,
look.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, I know. Last year we almost pulled the trigger on it.
I almost don't need another jacket, temptation to get it is. They also had a old school style Roos sweatshirt, and I feel like I could teach
you
that, and
you
nobody
should.
Would say anything.
You're the professor there. Why don't you get that? You should get some Roos gear.
It's like not cold enough for a
it
sweater.
Will be soon.
I know that.
It will
I
be
own
soon.
Some Roos gear. I just thought maybe a new crew neck sweater. You know.
So let's get back into the Chiefs for a little bit before we get to tonight's Thursday night matchup, Packers and Commanders. I think it's an interesting game based on the narrative around the Packers and obviously what the Commanders were last year and their young quarterback, Jaden Daniels. But Rob Gronkowski was on with Kay Adams over on FanDuel TV and had this to say about the Chiefs.
What I was surprised about is when things aren't going their way, as you can see, when they start struggling a little bit, they start yelling at each other. Their blame game starts going on.
Yeah,
you can see it on
that?
The sidelines. And that's not a good situation. I mean, you want to come together when you're down, when things aren't going your way, and you want to come together to figure out why, you know, everything's not going the way it needs to go. So to see them starting to point fingers is not a good sign. They got to, you know, get incorporated on and get on the same page and not be blaming others. Remember Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas, and Buster Douglas finally beat the crap out of Mike Tyson and made Mike Tyson not invincible anymore? Well, this is kind of the same situation. The Philadelphia Eagles opened the floodgates last year in the Super Bowl versus the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, hey, we're not afraid of this super team, Kansas City Chiefs, that are very, very well known. I feel like a lot of teams last year had that fear. Oh, I can't swing on the Chiefs. We can't give them our best shot because they're so well known and everyone is talking about them. So the Philadelphia Eagles punched them in the face. The Chiefs didn't know how to react to that because no one else was doing that. Well, going into this year now, the Los Angeles Chargers punched them in the face. The Chiefs were like, whoa, they're coming at us. How do we react? Well, they didn't know how to react because no one was doing that before. So the Philadelphia Eagles opened that floodgate of, hey, if you punch these guys in the face, you take it to them, you come out swinging, they're going to fold and they're not going to be the team that you've been seeing all last year.
So that was Gronk on Kay Adams' show up in Adams yesterday. I think there were two things that he said that were very different. One, if you want to say that teams do not fear the Chiefs the same way, I think that is reality. I think that absolutely is reality after the Super Bowl. And certainly if the Chiefs lose on Sunday to Philadelphia, I do think teams will not, you know, respect them the same way. Fear them the same way. I agree with him there. Now, I disagree when he was saying, you know, oh, that, you know, you saw Chris Jones barking at, or Drew Tranquil barking at Chris Jones, and they were arguing with you. Tom Brady was throughout iPads and yelling at teammates throughout his entire career, and they were still winning Super Bowls that year. I firmly disagree with the notion of, like, the team is falling apart because they were barking at each other. I think the individuals involved in the context of it was truly more about accountability. It wasn't on the sideline, somebody shoving anybody. By the way, we've seen that before years, and they've won Super Bowls those years, when it's actually been a true, looked like more of a true argument. This was on the field, Drew Tranquil holding Chris Jones accountable. So I agree with him on the, hey, the teams in the league do not fear them the same way. I think that is just true, and that's reality of where we're at. But I disagree with the Chiefs are just going to fold if you punch in the mouth. The Chiefs won 17 one-score games last year, so this in trailed in games.
And like, have a 650 winning percentage when down 10 points. So you can't even, like, get down double digits gold and go get them. First off, this is the part of, like, you can't see through your own eyes sometimes, gold. Yeah, you know what? Now that I think back, Tom Brady was pretty notorious for never getting mad on the sidelines or yelling at players or coaches. Right? The more we think about it, sure, Gronk, that was never the case. He was also on a team that didn't win a Super Bowl for 10 consecutive years. And during those, this is the mistake I think he's making. This isn't even meant to be a knock on what the Patriots are doing here. They went 10 years without winning a Super Bowl. They went to two during that time, Gold. They lost both to the Giants and Eli Manning. But they went 10 years without winning a Super Bowl. During that time, I was a fan of another team. You were a fan of another team. I can assure you, everyone still respected them as the toughest team and the biggest game of the season. That entire stretch, even when they were losing it. Beating the Patriots and playing the Patriots and having to get past the Patriots was still the marker. Getting the Chiefs in a regular season game, punching them in the mouth in a regular season game, that means nothing. Because when a playoff game still starts, you will fear them the same way you always feared them. Do I think they look as scary of a team early as they did last year, or the ability to beat you? No, but last year they didn't run through teams. I think for the next 5 weeks, we're looking at a lot of, like, trying to win 24-23, 27-24, 21-20. I think there'll be some of that version of it. But the idea that teams won't, like, oh, just punch him in the mouth and it's over. Okay, I hope teams have that attitude going into games.
Yeah, that was the part I disagree with the most, as I said, with what Gronk had to say, was the idea that the Chiefs fold if they get down. I mean, heck, things didn't go well for them on Friday, to say the least, when they started. And then in the second half, and right before halftime with the kick, but in the second half, they were much better on offense. They scored five straight drives, not touchdowns, but five straight drives. And so, to me, that was also a fighting back and not just laying it. Laying over would have been the Chiefs would have lost by 14, 17 points, right? You know what I mean? It would not have been a one-score deficit or one-score loss that the Chiefs had. That to me, is folding. It's where all of a sudden you look, it looks like the team quit. We may not have liked how the Chiefs looked, and guys were open. Nobody can. The team did not quit in that game. That's folding over when you get punched in the mouth. So I disagree with that, and the sideline stuff is laughable to me. I'm not worried about that one bit. But I think, especially if the Chiefs lose on Sunday, teams are going to see an 0-2 next to the Chiefs if that happens, and people will not view them at all as serious contenders. Now, you can say that's wrong. That's fine. I'm just saying that will be the consensus opinion outside of Kansas City. We may not like it, but outside of Kansas City, the consensus opinion on Monday would be, they're not a team you have to be as concerned with. I think it's a mistake still, but that will be the thought.
Can I say that, like, the logic doesn't even hold for one game? the Chargers punched him in the mouth. They were beating up on the Chiefs in that game. And in the middle of the third quarter, it was still a tie game. And in the fourth quarter, they were only down one possession. It doesn't even make sense for how this season started. The Eagles are the only team who punched him in the mouth, and then they went down, right? Like, they went down quick and were never in the football game. They were in the Chargers game. They've been in every other game. They very rarely lose a game in which they get beat up so bad you never hear from them again. There's one or two Bills games I can think of in a regular season. One Ravens regular season game, one Bills regular season game, where they got kind of steamrolled. The Eagles Super Bowl, the Bucks Super Bowl. It's about one every year, maybe every other year in the Patrick Mahomes era, where they get completely rolled over. And then the next week they just win. So, like, it's never, you know, what is their longest losing streak under Patrick Mahomes? Is it two or three? It can't be more than three.
No, they've never. Yeah, I mean, they've only
11 is their worst season. And 11-5. They didn't lose five in a row.
They've never been two games under 500. So unless they lost four in a row when they were already way up above 500, it just happened. It hasn't happened really.
I'm just trying to decide if they lose this week, will this be the longest losing streak in Patrick Mahomes' history? Three games, Super Bowl, the two regular season games.
They lost three back-to-back games in December of 2023, I believe. That's right. The Chiefs have their, the Chiefs will have a three-game lose. They were getting ready to play the Patriots to avoid their third straight loss.
So they didn't lose three in a row?
They were last on a three-game losing streak in 2014 with Alex Smith as the quarterback, I believe.
Okay, so two
games
in a row?
Also, the last time they started 0-2 was in 2014.
Right.
So
that's right,
that speaks to its own, right, doesn't it? I mean, if this is the...
But that's why it's they're in uncharted territory, hence the conversations that are happening heading into this. I mean, it's weird. It's just the nature of always, like, the vibe of any franchise. You lose in week one, then people can start the, well, what if you fall to 0-2 conversation? And then if you go to 0-2, it's like, well, you can't go to 0-3, and everybody starts bringing up playoff percentages of teams that start 0-3 and the chances of making a postseason. We had those conversations last year, frankly, about Cincinnati, you know, like on this show because of Drew as well. Like that's the conversations that happen when you drop your opener. It's crazy because you've only played one game, and you don't have a chance to get another win until Sunday. It's not like you can go and play game two the next day and end the convo. But for a week, people will have conversations about you potentially falling to an 0-2 record. That's just the reality of it. You get to 1-1, and everything, honestly, just stabilizes and everything chills out. Then you get the Giants. It's such a massive game for...
And then you'd be back to a winning record. Massive, it doesn't feel bad.
Massive game for narrative. And I just think in the pulse of the fan base in conversation, more than it is actually like truly worried that they're not making the postseason or something crazy like that.
No, I agree with that. I mean, Mitch over at Kelly's had sent me. Mitch Kelly had sent me a message. He said, no NFL quarterback, this was a stat, no NFL quarterback has recorded 38 career wins or more without losing at least three games in a row. Patrick Mahomes, who's won 106 career games and never had three straight losses. This would be the first time ever that he would lose three straight games. And that's including going back to a Super Bowl, not even like a regular season losing streak. And so when you start thinking about where they are, I just have a hard time, feeling like this team has unraveled because they played one divisional game. And I don't know, the other part is like they're like 40-1 in the division. I know it's not that, but it's essentially that. It's like 35-6 or whatever the hell it is. They're allowed to occasionally lose a divisional game.
So I agree with you. I guess the part that is different is what we don't know the answer to, is this about to be a shift? Like I'm with you. We can cite all the stats that say, oh, They're this dominant in the division. They've done, that is all true. The question and what people are because of the Super Bowl mainly, people are questioning is that era over? Is that dominance getting ready to change? And that's why this weekend is so important. I'm with you. We can keep citing the AFC West records and everything, and I tend to think that they are going to be just fine when we get further into the season. But I understand why there is a thought out there of like, yeah, you can cite me Mahomes hasn't lost three in a row ever. I can cite you that they've never been below 500, two games below 500, I should say, in the Mahomes era. All that's true, but are we about to see it for the first time, and therefore it's just a different era? And I think that's what's scary to some fans out there as well.
The idea that it could change.
Is this just about to be a shift? Not that they're going to be an eight-win team, but like, are they going to just be one of the very good teams of the league? Not not the best teams in the league. That's the scary part. I tend to think that, one, they're winning Sunday. Spoiler, I know we have to do our picks tomorrow. Spoiler, I have the Chiefs winning on Sunday. I love the fact that they're an underdog. I love the fact that the narrative is that it's over and all this. I do have them winning on Sunday. But if they don't, I recognize the reality of the conversation, depending on
then
how
we'll
they look.
We'll be having on Monday. Yeah.
So isn't this, kind of going back to what you guys were talking about earlier with the division, shouldn't, it's going to be weird, but shouldn't Chiefs fans be rooting for the Raiders? Because if the Chargers win, they'll be 2-0 and 2-0 in the division, including up half a game on the Chiefs because they beat the Chiefs. Like
I would agree.
They'd be back. They'd be up a game and a half, if not more, depending on how things go Sunday.
Yeah, but if the Chargers win, I'm also not going to lose my mind. You know, like
it goes back to the same thing.
Yeah, sure, but I'm rooting for the Raiders. Meanwhile, tonight, for an early season matchup, doesn't get a lot better than this for a Thursday night game. You know, we get a lot of trash Thursday night football. Gold, you know, I am prone to straight up skip Thursday night football. Like, coming up tonight, Browns, Jets. I'm like, I'll be doing other things. Tonight, instead, we get Packers, Commanders. And the more I think about this game, the more I just feel like the winner of this game should be considered the favorite coming out of the NFC for the number one seed.
Really?
And I know only two games in, that's a lot. This is a team that played in the NFC title game last year in the Commanders. The Packers, who might have the best roster in the entire NFC, and two of the better quarterback situations in the entire NFC. I'm not saying it's going to, in the end, determine it. But at the end of the day, these two teams could very well be with a similar record. And if this game could end up determining which of those teams has the tiebreaker on the other, I feel like this kind of tells me who the class of the NFC is. Are the Packers for real? Is all the defensive stuff for real? Are they getting ready to, like, run shop in the NFC for a little bit? Because they've got Jordan Love, who's a very good quarterback, and Micah Parsons, who's one of the best, five best defenders in the entire NFL. Or is Jaden Daniels really just going to be that guy in these big-time games and run through some people? I feel like it tells me a lot about the NFC picture. Because there's other teams who are going to be in the mix. I think these are the two best teams. I think it's so, and now the 49ers are hurt, and like the Lions don't look the same yet, and so like I don't know, man. It just feels like these are the two best
teams. The 49ers are banged up. I didn't have them winning the NFC West anyway. I actually feel better. I'm sure you feel better about your Cardinals, and I feel better about the Seahawks, even though the Seahawks just lost to the Niners.
Cardinals won.
The Seahawks did lose though, head to head to the 49ers. But Brock Purdy is going to be out for maybe 5 weeks. I think the Packers are going to be in the NFC title game. Had that as a preseason.
Yeah, you did.
Prediction. I have them in the Super Bowl playing the Chiefs. We'll see if the Chiefs hold up their end of the bargain. The way things are trending, everybody acts like there's no way that'll happen, but let's just see how the weeks play out. I don't know if I agree that the winner of tonight's game, though, is the best team in the NFC. Now, if it's the Packers, I think I would agree, right? Because they've already beat the Lions. To me, they have the entire complete roster. And there's not a I don't really have much question mark on the roster other than will one of their receivers really emerge as a number one. For the Commanders, it would be a massive win. It would make you wonder if they're going to push the Eagles this year more, even more, in the NFC East. The Eagles, of course, are playing the Chiefs. The reason why I cannot say that the win tonight definitively makes either team the one, because what if the Eagles come to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs and look convincing? Then it's still the Eagles running the NFC as far as I'm concerned at that point.
Defending
so
champs.
That's why I don't think it, if the Packers win tonight, I totally get the conversation about them being clearly the best team in the NFC. Some people already have them number one in their like week one, you know, power rankings that they're the best team in football, just like that. I'm not, you know, that to me is a bit much.
I'm not going that far.
So I guess what I'm saying is if the Packers win tonight, then yeah, I think they emerge as right now the number one team in the NFC. If the Commanders do, I don't think that makes them number one. I don't even know if that for sure means that they're necessarily at the end of the season going to be better than the Packers even. It would be an impressive win. But let's not forget, if the Eagles win on Sunday, then why would they not be the best team in the NFC at that point?
No, I understand that part, mostly because I wasn't overly blown away with how the Eagles looked in Game 1. And if they win, sure, they will then be 2-0 and we'll be having a different conversation. I understand that. But the Commanders, it'd be a road win against Green Bay. Then you know that they're going to have a stretch against the, you know, like, because they won, they've got a tough stretch in the middle of the season where they'll have to face some good teams, but their division is still in question about what difficulty level it's going to be and all this other stuff. And I understand. Yeah, I feel like it says a lot about the Commanders if they could go and beat.
Oh, it'd be impressive. Yeah, I mean, no doubt, it'd be very impressive on a short week to go on the road against a team that looks so dominant against Detroit, who of course was in the NFC title game a year ago. Yeah, I mean, it would be.
Packers was in the divisional round last year.
The Packers did because the title game was Lions and
Commanders.
Yeah. Oh, man. Right. Wait. No. Hold on. We got that backwards. Hold on.
No.
Divisional game was Lions, Commanders, Eagles. And Eagles.
Eagles. Eagles. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
The Packers lose to the Eagles. Is that who they lost to? I don't remember now.
I'm very confused about the NFC side of the playoff bracket.
So we can all remember.
The Eagles were in the Super Bowl to the Chiefs, so they were in the NFC title game against
the Commanders. To get
to
the Eagles. I don't remember who the Eagles played.
They blew out the Lions. Remember, the Commanders destroyed the Lions. That's what it was. Commanders just annihilated the Lions.
Yeah, and Philly, obviously Philly destroyed the Commanders. They scored like 50 or whatever points on them and absolutely wiped the floor with them, but I just couldn't remember what the previous round was. Commanders beat the Lions 45-31. Last year in the playoffs.
There you go.
Eagles were closer to losing to the Rams than anyone else, 28-22, at least on that side. So I was just trying to remember. So the Packers didn't even make it past the they lost in the opening round to the Eagles. I was trying to remember where they lost. They lost to the number two seeded Eagles in that first round.
It's 1 week. Is anybody suggesting they're trying to change their preseason pick after week one? Who did you guys have in the NFC title game?
I unfortunately had Lions, Packers.
I had Packers, Bucks, with the Packers winning.
Chiefs, Bills in the AFC. I don't feel any need to change that at the moment.
Drew? Are you nervous about any of yours?
I had, no.
Okay.
I had Eagles, Packers in the NFC title game, and then Ravens, Bengals in the AFC title game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to change any of them.
No.
Not that you can anyway. You're stuck. They're locked in.
I guess there's...
If I could change the Lions, I might.
Panthers making the playoff pick was, eh.
Oh, you're worried on right away.
You've already faded on... Well, you've already quit on your boy.
No. I'm sticking to my pitch, Bryce Young, but it didn't look that great.
Looked like the first 7 weeks of last season, Bryce Young, not the final 10 weeks.
Ted McMillan had a ridiculous catch in that game, too.
Yeah, Bryce Young did not look good.
I still do not understand why they traded away Adam Thielen for essentially nothing. It's like you... And now he wanted to get out, so maybe that's what it is. But, like, he was the safety net for your very young quarterback who you're trying to be good this year. Maybe, just hypothetically, I would keep that guy around. But, no, what we know this for a fact. Week one is the worst week of the year to make any determination on any NFL team at all. The Lions could just as easily go drop 65 this weekend, and we have a very different conversation about where they are and who they are and everything. Week one is a liar. It is always a liar. Yeah. And the Saints last year, we don't need to go that far back. The Saints last year were dropping like 50 points a game, and everyone was talking about what next job their offensive coordinator was
going to get. He's now the OC in Seattle. But yes.
He got fired. He quit by the end of the year. He wasn't even back with the Saints the following year. Ugh.
Tomorrow we can talk about the teams that look just pitiful in week one. Who do we actually think bounces back? Like, I still think, and we're trying to tank for last place in our circuit contest. Like, that Dolphins game is really tricky to me because the Dolphins look so bad against the Colts. They're home favorites against the Patriots, and everybody saw the Dolphins look like crap. And I feel like the thought would be like, oh, the Patriots are clearly winning that game. Like, that's the thought I would have too.
Yeah,
but watch the Dolphins go out and look really good out of nowhere. But
it's not like the Patriots looked good in week one.
They lost to the Raiders at home.
And Drake May looked awful.
So that's what's fun about the NFL, man. Week two definitely maybe stabilizes some things and tells us a little bit more of the story. Don't forget Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan, presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Up next, former Chiefs wide receiver Danen Hughes, part of the Chiefs Radio Network, joins us. We'll ask him about how this offense can match up against Philly, not having Rice, not having Worthy, and does he think they'll be willing to run the football more on Sunday?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.